This episode of We Are Libertarians is brought to you by Audible.com. Enjoy one free audiobook courtesy of We Are Libertarians. Choose from more than 100,000 audiobook titles, including works by Ron Paul, Walter Block, Murray Rothbard, and the Cato Institute. Audible.com also has audio of radio and TV programs and audio versions of magazines and newspapers. You can get the Audible app on any mobile device or download the audio to your computer. Go to audibletrial.com/WAL or head to WeAreLibertarians.com and find the link to get one free month of Audible today. Welcome to We Are Libertarians for this week. And yes, I can confidently say this week, it's been less than 7 days since our last episode. So I'm very impressed with us, as we usually am. Right, Greg?
Tomorrow's a day of rest.
Mm-hmm.
It's been 2 months.
I know. How are you doing, Creighton?
I'm okay.
Apparently, the prom king of the Liberty Movement. So, that's a private joke. Greg Linz is over there. Creighton is next to me. Say hi, Greg.
Hello, hello.
And Creighton, say hello into that mic, please.
Hello.
Captain Mike Technique. I may have to break out the mic stand a little bit.
I know. I'm shocked he hasn't even asked for it yet. Usually that's his first request.
Would you like a mic stand? I can get one.
I mean, if you guys, if you get, if your headphones there get you annoyed because of the way I'm holding it, then maybe.
Well, yeah, my headphones get me annoyed because this is what the listeners are listening
that's
to.
That's what I'm saying. Like,
see, the thing about this whole
Greg's not going to care
radio thing is where we talk into the microphone so the people out there can hear it, not so Greg and I can hear it.
Cause I thought your ears were just cold.
No.
Canadian.
Canadian ears. Well, let's pause for a second and get Creighton a mic stand. All right, see, through the magic of editing, you didn't even know how long that took. That took 2 minutes away, and none of you knew, because we are professionals. We clean this up, we edit it, we make it sound good.
Which just shows why we'll never do a live broadcast.
No, we will.
who knows what plans are in the works for the future. I really feel like I am back. I really feel like spring has sprung for me. I took a year off.
doesn't look like spring has sprung.
No, it is. There's like 6 inches of snow outside, but mentally in my head, I actually feel like doing things again. So
the phoenix has risen from the ashes.
All right, we've got another. I have to talk to both of you about Thursday night. We might have a podcast then about education, if you guys are game.
Yeah.
So that would be like 3 podcasts in the span of 2 weeks. I'm feeling okay, I guess.
Oh, you've been on it. You've been editing the site, cleaning things up, adding new content and distribution links.
Yeah. So yeah, this whole week I've been working on the website WeAreLibertarians.com. Check it out. So a couple things we've added cleaned up all the links. I went through and I looked at all of the sites that we have linked there, all of the libertarian sites. And you know what I discovered? The links that I built out 2 years ago and put up on a website for all these libertarian websites, almost all of the personal blogs are gone.
Totally.
And none of the others have updated. The only ones that are continuously updated are the think tanks, and it's really kind of it. I mean,
yeah.
The think tanks truly are where most people are getting their information, and the ones that survive and last, thanks to the, you know, the Koch brothers. And
well, a lot of people, too, moved their content over to Liberty.me.
Yeah.
A lot of people did.
Really? Good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Liberty.me is a great site. Almost as good as WeAreLibertarians.com, but
it'll never quite reach that, you know, that high, but it'll be close.
So I went through and I tried to put together as many links as I could, all the good sites. You'll notice Alex Jones dot whatever is not on there. We don't roll that way. And we also solicited, and if you're listening to this podcast, go to our Facebook page, because we've been soliciting from our listeners, what are your favorite libertarian podcasts? What are your favorite libertarian websites? What are your favorite libertarian books that people can read? One thing that I think is missing in the libertarian movement is sort of an introduction to the libertarian movement. Here is what is almost curated a little bit. Here are the sites that you should spend time going to if you're at this stage. Second stage, here's where you dive in. Third stage is this. You know, not necessarily focusing on political action, because we are ambidextrous when it comes to political action. But when it comes to the libertarian philosophy, kind of curating what podcast last, what ones are worthwhile, your worth your time. And some of the podcasts that we collected that I put into the website and on that Facebook page, and there's an OPML file that you can download and just upload right to iTunes. Some of those are not my cup of tea. They are not nearly as good as this podcast. I can say that with confidence. But they are worth your ears, and you should check them out. And you see if you can guess which ones I'm talking about.
And one little shout-out, because we are not... if you are of the black and yellow crowd, more of the voluntarist, anarchist, agorist, mutualist type, Roger Paxton's new podcast, Lava Flow Podcast, is very good if that is your particular brand of libertarianism.
I think any libertarian would get into it. It's a very good podcast. It's very news-oriented, sort of like news and commentary, almost like an Arkansasian Paul Harvey. I don't know how you say Arkansasian.
Arkansian.
Is that right?
I think so.
He's a Keynesian. No kidding. He's an expert in Arkansasians. Arkansians. Sorry, Roger. Yeah, check out the Lava Flow Podcast, cyberloafing.ninja. You can check out our friends Maya and Harry. Maya and Harry have launched a podcast that's non-political. I listened to the first episode before Creighton and you got here. Nerdiest shit I've ever heard in my life.
I swear to God, it's like if an anarchist pretended they were Julia Child. Like, that was the last episode because it was about cooking, and I was like, this is unlike anything I've ever seen. So it was original as all get out.
Oh, I know. It is awesome. And I don't think it's just because we know Maya and Harry that it's awesome.
No.
It's just they're so different.
You can't believe it's happening. Like, you're like, no way.
The first one was about, like, Raspberry Pis,
yeah,
and ninjas and vampires, and there's a...
Like Raspberry Pis, like...
The computer.
The computer thing, yeah. And then there's a pineapple now, and the chick co-host works on porn. It's everything you think Maya could possibly be, and Harry, too. Like, it is... Check out cyberloafing.ninja, and we'll have Maya and Harry... And I'm sorry,
That is the best URL.
Right? Of all time. I know. It's brilliant.
That is fantastic.
And their website is awesome because you go to the website and, like, you click a page and it, like, transitions. It's like Maya. And it, like, flips. It flips. And it's just, like, you got to go check it out. Go check out cyberloafing.ninja. Who else? There's and the Now Trending Show with our friend Josh Featherstone. Josh, I don't know if Josh has been on the podcast here, but he was Maya's co-host for the Untouchables.
Uncontrollables.
I always think of the Untouchables because that's how we did the artwork. That's what the branding was based off of. But, yeah, so check out the Now Trending Show as well. So those are some three podcast updates. I'm going through the website, updating things, updating links, updating podcast books. We put together YouTube video playlists, so you can just go to the playlist and hit play, and you can watch Liberty TV for hours and hours and hours on end because I've collected so much stuff. And if you see stuff that's missing, let me know. Send me a Facebook message or to the We Are Libertarians website. I also have, not totally finished, but it is live, put up the work that I did at the Advocates. So I was the marketing guy for the Advocates for Self-Government, or the Quiz People, as they are to be known for a while. And so one of my directives there was to build something for after the quiz, because the fundamental problem with the quiz is you learn that you're at this place on the libertarian spectrum, and then we just say, thank you, have a nice day. Or they say that. Still we, I guess. when you've hired me, you have me for life.
You're like certain diseases.
Yeah. certain organizations might find that out soon enough. You will love me. So there was no, like, there's no, you go to a table, you go to one of Creighton's YAL tables, and you take the world's smallest political quiz. There's some friendly face, hopefully, waiting to walk you through what a libertarian is, or... Here's a conservative. How can we move you up the diamond? And so that was one of the things that I worked on. And so Before I left, I was only there a year, but before I left to take the Bob and Tom job, I had been working out just kind of a fundamental statement of what libertarianism is. Very simple, boil it down to as simple as possible in an easy to understand way that people can share with their friends that isn't going to take a ton of time, but is thorough enough to kind of get the points across, and it's not written in professor speak. Because so much of what, if you try to access information in the libertarian world or to learn what a libertarian is, you're going to get an old white guy in a suit and tie who works for a think tank and is a professor, or you're going to get Maya, who we affectionately call the black and yellow crowd, which we have no problem with. We love our black and yellow friends, but not always able to connect to Mr. and Mrs. America on a fundamental level. So this is kind of designed to honor all libertarian strains of thoughts by just boiling down the basics of what a libertarian is. So go to WeAreLibertarians.com. They did not keep my work because they're moving in a different direction. Our friend Brett Bittner took my job there, former LP executive director of Georgia, and he now works for the Advocates here in Indianapolis. And he is working on some really awesome stuff that I can't talk about yet, or we'll have him on to talk about it. But they moved in a different direction, and I said, hey, can I steal my content back that I wrote out for our website? And he said, whatever, we don't care. And then I cried. No, he didn't say that. No, he said, sure, go ahead. So check it out, WeAreLibertarians.com. Look for the blue tab. There's two navigation bars. And then it basically, I think it says, what is a libertarian? Let me look at that. You think I'd know, considering that it is our website. But so check out WeAreLibertarians.com and go to the tab that says the big ideas of libertarianism.
Mm.
I was not even close. So the big ideas basically are, what do you believe? What do you owe society? And what can a simple pencil teach us about the world? Very thought-provoking.
Very zen.
Right. And if you work through that and you see typos or if you see philosophical ideas that you don't feel are well-represented, feedback is always appreciated because this is not, Greg's giving me that look. We don't care about your opinion.
I encountered this today already once.
Okay.
I'd put up Ron Paul had made a comment this week.
Right.
He didn't mean, well, granted, you'll never overcome the ties of the word secession and slavery. They're in American history, they'll be tied forever, but he said the secession is happening and it's good. Innocuous comment. Purely as that the states are asserting their rights to not be bound by federal law. Well, so I put a picture of Ron Paul's face on Jefferson Davis on the back of a Confederate flag and then put as the Ronimal, the modern Jefferson Davis, and immediately got attacked. Take it down. It's not doing anything to help liberty. And if you know me at all, the absolute wrong way to ever get me to do anything is to tell me to do something. That is the stupidest thing you could ever do. Because then I'm going to do it 10 times more just to make you angrier.
Right. We've had a state senator here in Indiana who...
I saw Alinsky over here.
Yeah. Yeah.
There is a state senator whom I have a lot of respect for and has a great bill here in Indiana. One great bill that abolishes Senator Mike Delf, abolishes straight ticket voting, which is a huge problem. It is just basically a protectionism bill for the two parties. He also has a bill that Phyllis Kozinski has written about at We Are Libertarians, where you can just download somebody's cell phone without a warrant.
Yep, all the data.
So, kudos on one bill, and on another, you had written a piece about his stance on gay marriage, and you had just put a picture of his face and written "fool" really big. And apparently, if you Google Senator Mike Delf, it is the number two photo.
That's right, on the image results,
which is really chapping his ass. And
oh yeah!
And instead of like coming to you or I and just saying, "Hey, you know, here's the things that we have in common. Could you be a decent person and take this down?" He went to like five different people around us, and they came to us. And now it's just like a point of pride. It's like, "Hey, that's the Senate bill where he's downloading phones." Extra fool, like write that.
I'd offered. I was like, he just wants to meet for coffee. I was like, I don't care. I don't care if he disagrees with me. He just has to be able to defend his opinion. It better not be with the Bible. Like, if you come into that conversation and your only point of defense is the Bible, it's staying up forever, and I might take out Google Ads.
So, Justin Julian wrote on the Ronimal post, "No, this isn't helpful. Every left-wing nut job wants to tie libertarians and states' rights with the Confederacy and slavery. Don't give them a meme to make that connection. Take it down." He's not wrong, but...
No!
And so, Greg...
The point is to generate conversation about it.
Greg responded with, LOL, no.
And then, yeah. But it's all right. Regardless, so. Justin Julian, thanks for being a fan, liking our page, and listening. But
yeah,
perhaps you should say, this just wasn't well done. That would hurt my pride, and then I'd probably take it down.
Brian J. Maloney, who is always the contrarian on everything that we post, writes, "I say leave it up. I consider it to be ironic humor, given that the Southern Cross is a symbol of everything that libertarianism is against. Slavery, paternal aristocracy, conquest." And then he said some other stuff. So go read it at the Facebook page. But
which, and that sort of ties into what we kind of talked about last week, is the proper way, because it's about messaging. And that's, I think, what we kind of wanted to cover with Creighton, too, to get his two cents on, like, the ability to sell liberty effectively and spread it through the various personality types that exist within the libertarian movement.
We're going to title this episode Creighton Harrington, Unplugged, because Creighton doesn't work for a certain youth-oriented organization anymore.
And now they sponsor the show back again.
Yeah, so they're giving us lots of money again, even more than they were before, most of it Coke-funded. No, Creighton...
Disclaimer, this is entertainment.
Yes, infotainment, like Fox News.
Creighton, many fucks are no longer given.
Very true.
So, Creighton... You have several burrs in your saddle. Several things are chapping your ass. One of them involves the Ronimal and what happened at ISFL.
Oh.
So
my God.
ISFL is the International Students for Liberty Conference in Washington, D.C. every February.
On Valentine's Day, no jokes intended.
Yeah, so nobody had a date anyways. And if a libertarian has a date, it's probably with another libertarian, so they're going to want to go to ISFL. We tend to flock together. So, at ISFL, this one dude stood up, and I didn't really follow much of this. You guys might know a little bit more about it than I do, but apparently this kid stood up and asked the Ronimal, who was Skyping in or something, about the newsletters, which...
It wasn't just about the newsletters. It was... And just off the... Off the get-go, I like ISFLC. I think it's a good event.
I do, too. I loved it. I think every libertarian... It is definitely the libertarian version of CPAC in my mind. I mean, it's great.
Yeah, it's not bad. It's I think it's got I mean, it's got pretty much people from every stripe there. But he got up, and it was actually him and a couple... Like, there were, like, two others, I think. And basically, they had decided beforehand they were going to write this long-winded... very libertarian letter that basically addressed stuff and yeah, okay, so it addressed people like Walter Block and Hans Hoppe and Ron and a couple other people who, by the way, it's no coincidence that they're all like ultra and cap, you know, they're capitalist and, you know, anarchist libertarians.
Lou Rockwell was
Lou
one
Rockwell,
of them.
Lou Rockwell. It's no surprise that they all work for like the Mises Institute because where this person who made this comment comes from. It's
you had this tone of disdain when you just had like, gross.
Well, it is. It's stupid because they got up there and he talked about all of this various stuff that they've done that's been they've been associated with that's not tolerant. Gary North is notorious for being an ultra, ultra, ultra Orthodox Christian. Ron has the newsletters thing. Hans Hoppe has a murky history when it comes to like his opinions on gay people.
And he wrote one thing on societies dominated by white males having the best track record for capital accumulation.
And it's
which
just
isn't
like,
exactly an arguable. It's not even an arguable position.
I mean, if you go back, if you go back and you listen to our interview with Walter Block, I mean, he makes the case for leering at women and like you remember the street walking video where the woman is. And
he
like,
wrote Walter Block wrote a book called "Defending the Indefensible" or "The Undefendable,"
which is really a great book.
And his personal convictions are that a lot of this stuff that he's defending is, in his personal, like his personal opinion, is wrong. Like, he disagrees with it because of the, like, his own personal morals. But he doesn't think, you know, like every libertarian would say, while I disagree with this, I don't think the state should be doing anything about it or anything like that. So it's like perfectly innocuous. And that, but that brings to the main point of the, like, the argument the kid was making is that he was arguing that that there needs to be tolerance within libertarian circles, and all of these things can't be like, we have to have tolerance of different cultures, different lifestyles, and all these kind of things to move forward. And I think that's a perfectly fine position to have. There's nothing wrong with
tolerance. Define tolerance in this context.
Like,
that's the trick.
Yeah, well,
we won't let Greg do that. Let's have you do it.
I mean, I think he meant it in the traditional sense of, you know, tolerance is like, maybe he means accepting, but which isn't what tolerance means, but I'm not 100% sure. But what was ironic about it is that the whole point of his argument was that we need to purge libertarians of people who have these opinions. And let's be clear,
we need to purge libertarians based on personal beliefs, even state enforced beliefs.
And let's be clear, these people who have these opinions, they do not believe that the government should be doing anything about it. And it's obvious that they just don't like, their feels are hurt. Their feels are hurt, and they don't want their feels to be hurt. And it's very typical of people who come from a left libertarian mindset to have this opinion where personal feels trump any type of policy discussion or any type of philosophy discussion. Everything comes back to, you're graded on how, whether or not you make their feels hurt. And honestly, you know what? You know, suck it. I don't care about your feels.
We've always had the discussions on this podcast. Most of the time, the split usually has been the pragmatic versus the puritanical, the destination versus the directional libertarians. The directional libertarians say, listen, we need to work within the political system and move in this direction to get to this point. Very pragmatic view. Use the system against itself. I have probably embodied that more than anybody else on the show, whereas a destination libertarian, Maya, says, this is how it's supposed to be, and I'm going to advocate for nothing but this, and your pragmatism is just a smaller form of statism. Now, there is not only that split, but there's also the split that has developed amongst the millennial libertarians, which is funny, because millennial libertarians don't necessarily care about politics in the same way that the previous generations have, where they joined political parties and then fought within that political party. Modern young libertarians don't care. They care about candidates, and they'll support candidates, but they're not joining political parties, which spells death for the Libertarian Party. If we're not careful, the Green Party, if we're not careful, all these, and the Republican and Democratic parties eventually as well. I don't think there's anybody who doesn't look at the Republican Party and what they're doing and says, there's no way they're going to be around in 20 years.
Information is too easily distributed now.
Right, and so now the split is sort of becoming, it's not about tactics, it's about the words that are spoken and the ideas that are wrestled with, where you can't talk about ideas.
It's thought control.
Right.
Let's just call it what it is. It's freaking thought control.
Censorship.
It is straight up, you aren't allowed to be associated with us because of what you think about in your personal life. It's like you are personally against people being gay, which is perfectly defensible from a pure libertarian standpoint. You know, you're not saying let's go out and kill gay people. You're not saying let's go take the government and make sure that no one can get married or something. You're straight up saying, I personally disagree with gay people. And
which I'm entitled to.
Which
do.
Every libertarian should hopefully say you can have an opinion, and then you're saying, well, because you think that, you are not allowed to be libertarian.
You're toxic,
it is straight up Orwellian thought policing.
It is, and it's worse than saying you can't be in the Libertarian Party because you have voted for as a Republican. You know, which is because of your past actions, you can't join this group. Now we're saying that you can't think out loud about ideas, which is a scary notion that. If you talk about feminism, you have to be female, and you have to be liberal-leaning. You can't, if you're Greg Lenz.
And you're not allowed to offend.
Right.
Pray to God you don't offend, because offending is like, now that's an ultra crime or something.
Right.
Like, how much do we have to hear about, you know, trigger warnings and all this stupid crap?
Privilege.
Like, this comes from the left, mostly, but left libertarianism is called left libertarianism for a reason.
Let me say Creighton's trigger warning. Privilege.
Oh, yeah, it's like, it's stupid stuff. It's like, you're not allowed to have an opinion unless you embody some sort of type of person who has been, you know, the curators of opinion have said, you're okay. You meet the criteria for being able to talk about this subject. And because you don't meet this criteria, we don't even have to listen to your arguments, because, you know, it's Marxist. It's like, you're arguing from a perspective of sheer inexperience that you just don't get it. And we're not even going to listen to your arguments. It's like the Marx would say that the capitalists, you didn't even have to listen to their arguments, because they're capitalists, and therefore they're wrong by definition.
Which is a logical fallacy.
It's a logical fallacy, but it's the same exact premise. And the reason I say left libertarian in regards to this thing that happened in ISFLC is because these guys, this group, are left libertarians. They are straight up, they have no problem admitting it, or at least one of them for sure. He works for the Center for Stateless Society, and if we're going to go all the way on this...
Oh, don't go there.
Why not?
They had some issues this week.
That person is no longer associated
with
that group.
Okay, good. Then never mind.
Go for it.
Yeah, no, that person is no longer associated with that group, but he founded the group.
Yeah.
And let's also say that no association with me whatsoever.
Oh, yes.
I have no R
Spangler,
on
not Spangle.
I have no R.
Yeah. No, the guy who founded the group that this dude who spoke at ISFLC came from, the guy who founded the organization that this kid works for, molested his child and turned himself into police and had been doing so for a long time. And it's like, but the only reason I bring that up is not to be ad hominem about it, but it is just, it's a double standard on their part that, you know, they didn't get up because people had known about this before ISFLC. It's not like this past week was the first time that anyone had heard about it. But he had announced this in public long prior to ISFLC. Well, not long prior, but before ISFLC. So it's like, at least make sure that you're not arguing from a position, like you're not promoting yourself from a position of that's attackable in that way.
Purity.
It's like, if you're straight up trying to say that we need to purge people who have bad thoughts out of the movement, and then you work for an organization who is at that time associated with a person who straight up raped kids, like, that's not a time for you to make an argument. Like, you need to at least wait until that guy's gone.
Get your house in order.
Yeah, it's poor decision making, and it's like, I can't even take you seriously because you need to be out there saying this guy was wrong. Left libertarianism doesn't mean child rape, and I know that it's bad that you have to go there. It should be obvious, but it also should be obvious that libertarians don't believe that, you know, gay people should be stoned in the street or something, and like, you have to go up and say that I don't believe in that all the time, but you freaking go to ISFLC and make sure the people know that, well, I think you do.
And this isn't everybody in ISFLC.
No, it's not. It's, so like, it was that's one small group.
And it's,
he got plenty
it's
of booze.
The thing
too.
Is, though, it's the... Oh, sorry. Is that too loud?
No. And we should say what happened is one of these guys stood up and made an issue of the newsletters that Ron Paul had published long ago.
That were not written by him.
That were written by Lou Rockwell.
Let's go.
Let me give context first. And then you and then Greg. Because we can't stop him. He's on a roll today. Classic Creighton is back.
He's on the horse, and it's good to have him back.
Yeah, so this guy stood up and wanted Ron Paul to defend the newsletters where there were...
He wanted him to disavow them.
Right, racist, homophobic stuff. And
again,
it's like, this stuff has been talked about, and there isn't a person in that room at ISFCL, whatever.
That didn't know about it, that hasn't heard about it.
Go ahead,
that's
Creighton.
One of the most infuriating parts about this is, like, I feel like this guy just got, like, just entered libertarianism, like, 2 weeks before.
For sure.
Or something. Because, like, we've had, like, people in the liberty movement, the libertarian movement, has had this debate already. We've already, you know, Ron ran for president twice. You'd think that those kind of came out and people talked about them once or twice before. Like, we already had this debate. Like, we've discussed, we've all come to terms with what this means, and everybody has their opinions on it. You're not informing anybody anywhere about Ron Paul's association with racist remarks in a newsletter 30 years ago or whenever, or 20 years ago.
And this is sort of the problem that a lot of new people to any political movement or party make, is they come in, and then they think they've discovered everything for the first time ever. They think that they've thought an idea that nobody else has ever had. They've come up with a strategy that is sure to win. And then the guy who's been in the Libertarian Party or the Libertarian movement for the last 30 years goes, yeah, we did that in 1992, and it failed miserably. Oh, well, look, a little treaty will work now. And then they do it, and then it fails miserably. And it's like, sometimes, young Padawans listening out there, you just need to come in, hang out, sit down, shut up, listen, learn, and absorb
information. You're not the smartest person in the
room. You're not the smartest person in the room. And so some of these people come in, they're like, well, I'm going to get Ron Paul. As if Rachel Maddow hasn't already tried that, who has a national TV show.
It's like, how many times, and plus, like, the guy was saying, why don't you disavow these newsletters? And it's like, Ron has disavowed those statements every single time it's brought up. It's like, if you know about the newsletters, then you should know that he's talked about them before from people who have brought up the same points you are, and he said a million times, I don't agree with those statements, period.
The hilarious thing is that it was written on Liberty.me, the open letter to Ron Paul.
That is the beauty of all this. Liberty.me is, no, this is my moment.
Let me say. Liberty, all right, go ahead.
Liberty.me is run by Jeffrey Tucker. Jeffrey Tucker is also a huge hero within ISFLC, and I think that's fine. He's a great, he has great opinions and all this kind of stuff. He's a huge hero at ISFLC, but he's also was involved in those newsletters. He was at least, well, okay, he could have been, there's a strong chance that he was involved, because he was part of that crowd, the Lou Rockwell, you know, Jim Powell crowd, who is more than likely the people who wrote those newsletters. So it's no secret. You can go on Google and check this out. If he didn't write them, I doubt that he actually wrote the newsletters, but he probably edited them because he was involved in publishing them. So this is the guy who you're writing your critique of Ron Paul on his freaking website. And it's like ISFLC is full. Like, that is like Jeffrey Tucker's like favorite event of the year almost. And like, you're... Well, do you not see the irony?
He is not getting it.
And we're not bashing him. We're just saying don't have the double standard.
Yeah, no. I think, like I said, Jeffrey Tucker, I think he's great.
You
I
aren't who you used opinion. To be or what you used to believe.
I don't think it's fair to pin Jeffrey Tucker to what this kid wrote, because it was just on the platform that Jeffrey Tucker is the head of.
It also shows that he doesn't even know what the heck he's talking about. Like, it's just further proof that...
The kid, you mean.
Yeah, the kid. Yeah. It's like, it's just further proof that this kid just found out about this probably like a month ago, and he's going to go talk about it at ISFLC because it's edgy.
He's probably spent years dwelling away in anonymity in the liberal movement and then decided, oh, this will be a little bit easier to get noticed.
And I'm just going to go out there, and I don't care how many of our viewers I piss off. I don't think left libertarians are libertarians. I think that you guys are just leftists who don't like modern liberals. So this kid isn't even a libertarian in my mind. He's just a liberal. And the girl who was involved with writing the letter, I don't think she may have been the one who actually asked the question. I don't remember if it was him, her, or this kid, because I wasn't actually there.
He blogged about it.
Corey Morrow?
Massimino or something.
Yeah, it's Liberty by the Slice, I think.
Something like that. Something. But the girl who was involved in writing the letter, like, she is ready for Hillary and is pictured with Wendy Davis and talking about how she's glad that she's supporting women's rights and all this kind of stuff. And it's like, it's very clear that this girl is just a Democrat. Like, she's just a liberal. And, I mean, so what? Liberals can critique libertarianism and all that kind of stuff. But it's like, you know, don't come into our party, our little house party that we throw every year, and throw rocks that we already have known about for, you know, a long time, just so that you can rustle some jimmies and probably get your name talked about for a month. Well, like, that's just cheap.
It is a sign of success, though. That's one thing.
Well,
that's a big enough platform and big enough audience. That's like, because that's kind of a compliment.
Dave Weigel,
right.
Dave Weigel reported for it, like, for Bloomberg.
Oh, yeah.
Weigel. So in a sick kind of way, it's like, man, really growing. And a whole bunch of media outlets wrote about it.
Isn't it
the growing rift?
Yeah. Isn't it a little bit hypocritical and double standardish of you, especially, my friend, when you know, you would, you're a conservatarian. You're definitely, you're probably the most, I'd say you know more about anarcho-capitalism than anybody else. You've long been an anarcho-capitalist, but you also are pragmatically Republican, and you have constant Rand boners. You're walking around with a Rand boner all the time. I mean, isn't it a little bit of a double standard for us to say that Republican-leaning libertarians or Libertarian Party-leaning libertarians are welcome at ISFC, but Democrat, pragmatically Democrat libertarians are not welcome?
Well, for one reason I think that's wrong is because I don't think you can be a pragmatic Democrat libertarian, because Democrats just are straight up the antithesis of libertarianism in America. So if you're a pragmatic Democrat libertarian, I'm going to assume that you're just a Democrat who is just like brushing up against libertarianism. At least Republicanism has a small, very small, but some track record of doing libertarian things in the past.
But Democrats, when it comes to civil liberties,
they've done what? What have they done?
Have Republicans done to lessen the economy? I mean, we have Barry Goldwater, and that's it. Ronald Reagan had a lot of great words.
But even that is more of an argument for it than what Democrats have. Like, they go out and talk about civil liberties and all this bull crap, and then they don't do jack squat about it.
Like the Republicans. That's what I'm saying.
But they don't pretend to. They don't have the civil libertarian strain.
Like, the only reason they were for civil liberties at all was because Bush was president.
The liberals of 20 years ago, the liberals of, you know, the 80s, the 90s, lessening into the 2010s, or in the 2000s, those liberals were open borders. They were freedom of speech, protect the First Amendment at all costs. Don't grow the state.
Those were Reagan Democrats that were in leadership.
But hold on. Let me make the distinction. There are always the idealists of every group. And there are the people who want to believe that Ronald Reagan was the perfect libertarian picture of politics, but in reality, in practice, he was not.
No, he wasn't.
And the same goes for a lot of Democrats. Democrats aspire to these higher ideals that libertarians would agree with, but not their actions.
Well, let's look at it this way. Can you tell me how many people sitting in the House of Representatives or Senate right now are even remotely libertarian friendly and are Democrats?
Ron Wyden would be
Ron
the closest
Wyden
thing.
Would only, and
right,
he's
gone.
Only,
right?
And he's but he was only our friend on the NSA.
Yep.
So that was it. So I can tell you right now that there are two, three, four, you know, there's a handful of people in the House, and there's a handful of people in the Senate who are libertarian friendly and are Republicans. That's a difference. That's an actual difference that freaking matters.
But doesn't it behoove us to try and cultivate a libertarian culture on those ideals that we agree with within the Democratic Party as well, to get more Ron Wyden?
Like we haven't before? Like libertarians haven't been reaching out to Democrats in the past about civil liberties issues, only to
Rand Paul went
around?
went to the Maryland House Rep, and they worked together on the minimum sentencing.
Rand Paul showing that you can do these issues as a Republican.
Sure.
Like, you don't have to go out and talk to these people the reason the Democrats are never going to be good to work with politically is because they just straight up will never agree with you on economics, period. They do not believe that the state should not be involved in the economy at all whatsoever. There are plenty of Republicans who are the same, because Republicans suck. But the Democratic Party is the party of big government economics, and I do not believe that you can ever, ever, ever get past that politically, because the government cares about money first, and then it cares about personal morality and civil liberties and all that kind of stuff. So until you're able to get the Democrats to agree that the government should not be involved in the economy, at least in rhetoric. I mean, I know the Republicans don't act that way all the time, but at least in rhetoric. Democrats don't even have the rhetoric.
It's about the view of government. Republicans aspire to move towards libertarian goals, where Democrats use coalitions to try and use the government as a tool for good.
The progressive mentality that's been around for 100 years,
right?
You know? Use government to reshape society through various means in order to promote your ideals. I mean, but that is the antithesis of libertarianism, and that is their stated goal. Like, it's very nice for, you know, left libertarians. They can go and say that, you know, some Democrat like Ron Wyden was a good ally, but it's like he was only on one issue and everything else he sucked. And I guarantee you that if the choice became for him to choose between a person like Rand Paul, who is more like us than like a Barack Obama, he's not going to choose Rand Paul. He's going to support Barack Obama. And that's the difference, is the Democrats are just, they are the other team. Libertarians just need to accept the fact that if you're going to look at things from a political perspective, I'm not talking about if you just ignore politics, then whatever, this conversation isn't for you. But if you're talking about from a political perspective, the libertarian ideology is a subset of the Republican Party in the mainstream view. That's just the way it is. You can hate it, you can love it, whatever, but it's the reality of our situation that we live in this world right now. Just freaking deal with it. I'm sorry.
I mean, for me, it goes down to first principle thinking, and it's the classic split is for the Democratic Party, and actually for a large majority of the social, or every social conservative or socially conservative leaning individual in both parties, it comes down to the social unit of analysis. And so within the Democratic Party, it's the collective. Within the Republican Party, it's evident in the rhetoric. It's evident in the way they appeal to voters. It's they don't do a good enough job probably of messaging it, but it comes down to the individual. And so when your social unit of analysis...
Or the family.
Well, I mean, economically, it's always the individual, the business owner.
Economics, for sure.
Yeah, and that's the one commonality that exists between libertarianism and the mainstream... like, the Lindsey Graham, the John McCain, we even share that.
Yeah, and let's be honest. You know, the John McCain's and Lindsey Graham's and the pure neoconservative philosophy, which is not just every Republican you disagree with, but the actual neoconservative philosophy, that comes from Trotskyism.
Oh yeah.
Like they've done plenty of study. They've done plenty of historical, you know, looks at where neoconservatives came from. Was Irving Kristol or whatever.
Yep, Irving Kristol
said that he was a young communist or whatever.
So
that all comes from like leftism. And I know, oh well, they're Republicans and you're trying to say everything that's left is bad, which I would say is true. On economics for sure. But like conservatism, I don't know what the appropriate one would be. Like that comes from a guy, a group of people who are socialists.
Collectivists.
They're collectivists. And, you know, I would say that the biggest enemies in the Republican Party towards libertarianism are neoconservatives who believe that government should be used to reshape society, and strong, hardcore Bible Belt kind of people who think that government should be used to reshape society. But they don't think the government should be used to reshape society in every single facet of our lives. They only think of it in
culturally.
Culturally. So Christian conservatives think that the government should be used, or Christian Republicans, think the government should be used to address, you know, moral decay as they see it and all this kind of stuff. Neoconservatives, I don't think we agree with them on pretty much anything. I don't even think, because economics takes a back seat to growing the imperial, you know, the empire.
Yeah.
So I will say that we don't agree with them on anything. But like the Tom Cottons of the world, they can go jump off a cliff for all I care.
Go back to Arkansas.
Yeah. It's so bad. So bad.
John, I know.
He is the John McCain of our generation.
Oh, but he's worse.
Oh, he's so bad. And
he's mockably awful.
Oh, he is. I'm sorry.
Senator Tom Cotton. But, he's the junior senator. A junior senator from Arkansas?
I think so, yeah. And what's ironic. Or
sorry, I had to go take my pants off.
I wouldn't say ironic. I wouldn't say ironic is the right word. But like back when Justin Amash was trying to get the NSA amendment passed back last session. Before last election, you know, it got really close. It was down to like, what was it, like 11 votes or something that it didn't, it was super close. And this would have been amended so that the NSA, it would have ended the dragnet surveillance of the authority. It would have straight up said NSA can't do dragnet surveillance.
Yep.
And, the White House sent out a brief that said, don't support this and all this stuff. Well, when they came time to debate on the floor, you know, each side had certain amount of time. And I think, I forget who it was that had the time allocated for the opposing side, but Tom Cotton was one of the people who was arguing against this amendment, and he was just like, you know, going crazy about it. So it's just very fitting that he became a senator, and now he gets to be there 6 years and do that kind of stuff.
Oh, he'll be. He'll
I don't
be
a, cotton to his way of thinking.
Tom Cotton will be a lifelong Senate stalwart.
Ugh.
I mean, because It's Arkansas.
Ugh, I know, and they're politics, man. They. Ugh.
Breaking news from the Facebook. If in all the things that I could tell you about that you wouldn't believe, this is going to blow your mind. So you made a meme of me, Greg, where you put Galt's face on Steve Jobs and said, this is the iGalt. I just received, in the middle of that discussion, a notification on that post that was posted on my wall on January 13th. Chris Galt, I bought an iPad Air this week.
Wow.
My God. Now he's asking for iOS app. Now let me tell the listener, the new listeners, why this is significant. Chris Galt, who exited the show...
Probably over.
Oh, it's been over a year.
No, but I'm saying like it was probably mostly because of...
It was, as we talked about in the 100th episode, because... We didn't want to go to Google Chat because he hated every other major tech company other than Google. Like, Galt is to Google as Creighton is to Rand Boners. Like,
I don't work for the guy. What do I mean?
Hates Apple and made fun of me constantly for having an iPhone.
Or did he just hate Steve Jobs and now he's dead, so he's open to it?
No. He says, giving it a shot. And I responded with, yay, it's April Fool's Day. Because there's no way this could be true. So, breaking news. Sorry to break up the conversation.
Samantha Lotes may lose her crush on him now.
Oh, he sold out, as Joe Ruiz pointed out.
He did.
So, Greg?
I mean, arguably, probably a good stopping point with this conversation, because we don't want to be prohibitive towards diversity within the movement, or within the Liberty crowd.
No, I'm fine with diversity.
You are. If you're going to come in...
You just spent 40 minutes yelling at them.
No. That's the reason diversity's good, is because you can argue with them. It's right. It's opposing viewpoints and all this kind of stuff. When you go up at ISFLC and say, you know, if I don't tolerate your viewpoint, so get out of my movement. Mm-hmm. Get out. Like, that is, you're literally, like, self-contradicting yourself. I mean, Hoppe would be like, ha-ha, look. But, like, it's
I like that you made this great libertarian thinker, what's Ralphie from The Simpsons.
Yeah. Or you'd be like, oh, look.
But there is a foundational difference between the migration of individuals that come from the left into the libertarian movement and individuals that come from the right. Most Republicans that become libertarians or libertarian-leaning come from a perspective of the individual as that social unit of analysis. The people that come from the left are so, and it's not their fault, because they've been raised, they've been in conversations, their entire political world is originated in the collective. And so they are going to struggle with that instinct to want to view and analyze things in the collective. And so you see it in the feminism debates, Kathy Reisenwitz, the argument she used to get into. You see it time and time again with... There's this instinct to...
There's like that society is a thing that's independent of, you know, society.
Yep.
It's like society isn't a group of individuals. It's like a thing.
And foundationally, it's that social unit of analysis, which is part of the nine? The Cato Institute's Bowes Principles of Libertarianism?
I think it's seven.
Seven. Yeah. And the individual as the social unit of analysis is where it all stems from. So it's an inevitable argument that will continue on. Yeah. For time and time again, but that means we have to do a better job of selling them that there is no society. You can measure anything in the collective and get the results you want. It starts with one.
And
since they're so minority-based, the individual, like Ayn Rand said, is the smallest minority on Earth.
Yeah,
and their rights have to be protected.
And I think what it comes down to is like they look at it as like atomistic individualism is what we support them. Like, that's retarded.
And
that's
such an antithesis and so gross to them. But they'll come around to it, because
support atomistic individualism. Libertarians are the free market is a collective thing. It is a group. It is individuals working together, and they for mutual gain to achieve a goal. I mean,
but it's a result. It's
explain atomistic, please.
Atomistic individualism is like this idea that, you know, that libertarians support like people being hermits. And if you're not a hermit, shut off from everything else, and so you don't have help from anybody, then you're not a real libertarian or something. And that's not true. Libertarians support, you know, individuals being the ultimate, you know, the ultimate, like, the end. Like, everything should support the individual to do what he wants. But individuals want to work with us. We're social people. We want to work with people.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
We want to interact with people. We want to go do things in groups. Like, no, but that's what I'm saying.
Ask Greg about his brutalism stuff the last couple weeks.
Well, I'm just saying is that humans are a social creature. But when it comes to, like, a policy on government or the use of force, the individual is, like, the moral, the philosophical beginning. But that doesn't mean that we don't support individuals being with more than one person and doing things together. It's like the reason we separate government from society is we would say the government is not, you know, people.
We disagree with that
together.
Forced bond.
Yeah,
it's the state enforced bond is what,
like,
kills
it. We don't want to force you to interact with people, but we want you to be free to interact with people.
Yep.
And, you know, that's not atomistically individual.
Like, so, yeah, the messaging has to be, we want to remove limits to your ability to interact with other individuals rather than we want you're going to like this person.
Yeah.
You're paying for this person.
Yeah, like,
that makes you a great, great patriot.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just think we need to be, so often when people come into the libertarian movement, we are a little hostile to them just because they don't know everything or they're not, you know, as Mary Ruart once said to me, but she meant it as an insult. but I've never forgotten it because she was insulting me to my face in 2009. some people are on various stations of the Liberty train. Some of us are just a little further along the Liberty train than others. And so, I mean, you went through this when you started on the podcast. You weren't a pure libertarian. You've moved more towards anarchy as we've had these open discussions.
Mm-hmm.
Gina came from more of a democratic leftist perspective and has long been bashed
because, and if you listen
she's
to
coming
our,
up from that perspective.
And I think if you listen to our show 2 weeks ago, you'll see the disagreements we were having. And, like, I really struggled to get through to her the principles I wanted her to understand. She couldn't do it because it's that is that foundational rift that will always exist when you come from the left.
Sure. Yeah, because there's a lot of deprogramming, but it doesn't mean it's not worth the effort.
No, so. It's absolutely worth the effort, because otherwise, without it, the collective's always going to outrank and outnumber the individual-based
right
supporters.
All right, so on FaceTime, out of nowhere.
This is my first time FaceTiming.
This is the first FaceTiming that Chris Galt
has ever done.
Yeah, this is also the first time that you've been on the show in over a year at least, right?
Yeah, it's been a while.
So what led you to the decision to get an iOS device? We just were mentioning it a little bit ago. We have kept your legacy alive by talking about you, which I'm sure has led to the reason that you unfriended me a couple weeks ago. But so we talked a lot about you in episode 100, and Sam Wotes is going to be super excited to have you back on the show.
Yeah, she does. I definitely wanted to come.
Galt, Creighton, and I started the podcast back in March of 2012, so it's been almost 3 years that we've been doing the podcast. Then we came to a point where Creighton and I had and basically everybody had a difference of opinion with Galt about about a lot of things, but mostly where we were going to chat, Facebook versus Google, and he was so into Google that he basically quit the podcast because we weren't going to G-chat. That he was pissed that we made him take some memes that he did about Creighton down that Creighton did not like. So it is good to have you back. What have you been up to since you've been gone?
Oh, I work at AT&T now.
Uh-huh.
Cell phones. So, work at the cell phone store.
Excellent.
Doing great. Sales. It's kind of the same thing as politics, right?
Yeah.
Just selling technology now instead of people or ideas.
So, do you do anything political anymore?
No.
Retirement's good, isn't it?
I'm a little happier now.
Well, that's good to hear. Couldn't have been much worse.
No.
So what led you to get an Apple device after being so anti-Apple forever?
Well, I guess I needed to figure out more specific things that I hated about it, so I needed to get one.
Oh, see, ever the douche.
No, I'm just kidding. I've never had an Apple product, and everybody said, if you're going to get one, the iPad's the best tablet. So I figured, hell, I needed a tablet, and somebody had a good deal on one, so I picked it up.
So, Creighton, is this awkward for you?
He said no. He doesn't
want to
talk.
Into the mic. Okay, good. Well, Galt, it is good to talk to you. We're going to get back to the podcast, but hopefully you'll come in soon.
What are you guys talking about right now?
We're talking about libertarians being douches, so just like we always talked about.
Well, hey, it was great to be on the show then for that segment about douchebag libertarians. That's me. Nice to meet you guys.
All right. See you, man. We'll talk to you later.
Me, I'll definitely love to be on the show sometime.
All right. Talk
good to
you.
See you, Greg.
Hey, bye. Good to see you too, brother.
All right. Bye, Chris. First FaceTime with Chris Galt. Well, that's interesting. So just in time for the 100th episode, because this is episode 99.
Wait, what?
This is episode 99, technically.
What? When did this happen?
Well, we did our 100th episode. You were here for it, but then now we're up to 99, and then I'm going to recategorize it. Because for episode 100, Joe could come into town. It was over Christmas break. Yeah. Peffers was here.
I'm saying, wasn't that... So we recorded...
We recorded... actually, episode 100 was technically episode 96.
I have no idea what's happening. What do you mean? Like, how many podcasts have been released onto the website as of this day?
99. So this will technically be our 100th episode.
So we're not releasing this until after we released the episode we recorded 2 months ago.
That's already been out. So we recorded 95 episodes, and the 96th episode we recorded with everybody in town as the 100th spectacular because it was 100. But we just hadn't done a total of 100 episodes yet.
That doesn't...
Oh, believe me, trust me.
That doesn't make any sense.
I heard from every OCD listener that we had, like, you've got to put this in the right order. It goes 96, 100, 97. I can't take it. It's messed up my feed. That's exactly what they said.
So what we did then is we...
It was in the future.
We recorded an episode far in advance,
right,
is what you're saying.
But we released it at that
time.
And
then we released it way too early.
Right. Just, yep. Yeah.
Wasn't that much easier to say?
Yeah, that was much more succinct.
You know what? Welcome to the final We Are Libertarians. if you haven't heard from Creighton and Greg, I don't know what happened to them. It's great to have you back on the show, Galt. And Harry, nice to see you here. These are the new co-hosts of the show.
That's racist.
What else were we going to talk about? We had a couple things on the docket, didn't we? A
couple things. We talked a little bit about Ron and his secession comments because that kind of segued in. But the other big thing that there's a couple things out there that I was kind of thought were interesting. One, but everybody else may not, the Netanyahu visit that's coming, and then how Israel this week leaked the details of the Iranian nuclear disarmament agreement, much to the White House's chagrin. They're pretty pissed about it. And then the Greek bailout, the Euros, looks like it's going to dissolve. Possibly. I mean, they'll try to save it, because if Greece leaves, it all comes apart. And then the other issue...
Why would Greece leaving break the Eurozone up?
I think mainly the biggest issue they're going to have is that they're not going to take any of the debt what they've accumulated or ever paid back Germany. And so when other countries that are heavily debt-laden see that, they're going to make that break as well. It's like Iceland in the crisis when they rejected the EU
can't socialize their debt.
They can't make them take it with them. They're just going to take the German money that was lent to them. I'm out, bro. They'll be shut off from the international debt markets for a little while, but they can always just print more money. As long as they do it correctly, and Greece has enough assets and probably enough gold, they could probably pull it off. And if other countries see that, what's the point of staying in the EU?
Yeah. That's my commentary for the week. Yep.
What else is
Go.
News?
Come on, Greg.
I don't know. Did you not follow it at all this week, like Israel and Netanyahu?
I didn't really follow much of... I heard about the Greece thing... The dissolution of the EU is going to happen at some point. I mean, all these alliances are going to be tested. I mean, NATO is, at one point, is NATO going to have to stand or make the decision not to stand up to Russia as they test the limits there? The EU, you're right, if Germany's just cutting off the tap to irresponsible nations like Greece, what's the point of the EU? You know, even all the way to the UN. I mean, it's what's the point of the UN? What good do they functionally do except redistributing wealth in the form of food and cash to dictators? So
I bet if the EU dissolves, the last country to go will be Scotland.
Oh, Scotland will fight a bitch. I mean, they will straight up cut you.
They won't declare their own freedom when they're given the choice, but they will.
They give the choice to declare independence.
I know.
No bloodshed.
We'll pass.
They say no.
Can I have some fish and chips?
The European Union in 30 years will just be another name for Scotland.
I know. You know what's funny? Iceland, back in 2007, when they had applied for EU inclusion, and the debt crisis killed everybody, obviously. But when they decided to nationalize their banks and create their own currency and then basically inflate away their debt through a revaluation, it worked. And the international debt markets came back within months. And it wasn't that high borrowing rate. It was under 5%. So if you are a heavily debt-laden country, it's like when when George Soros broke the pound, they just instantly overnight revalued their currency. They were able to basically inflate their way out of it.
Hmm.
And so it creates currency wars between everybody. And it makes you really nervous if you're a country that holds someone else's debt. So China should be crapping
like
their pants.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, we should too, because we hold a ton too as well. It's a whole new world. It's a world where we're going to see 2015 be a contraction in the economy, but it may not. It'd kind of be like the Depression through monetary policy. We won't actually see prices adjust. You know, they'll keep them up.
They'll keep pushing.
But
them up,
it'll be like a zombie economy that continues going on, and we'll see no growth in 2015.
Hmm.
I mean, the stock market's at an all-time high. All the smart money's selling right now.
Well, yeah.
Well, that's encouraging.
That wasn't a joke, Kenny, that said only a fool holds out for the top dollar.
Yep.
He made out pretty well.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. Well,
and the other
Netanyahu. Moving on to the next story, the Netanyahu thing. I don't really care that much. Can you give the Cliff Notes version? I mean, as far as I understand it, Netanyahu's running for re-election, and so the president didn't want to give him the chance to address Congress, which I don't know how often that happens, but I really don't see people like foreign leaders addressing Congress very often.
No, but it is supposedly our closest ally.
Sure.
And we're the only reason they exist.
And so he was invited, not invited.
It's pretty important to them that we like them.
Right. And so it's been sort of a back and forth between the White House and the House Republicans, between Boehner, you know, inviting him, not inviting him, and then Obama. And Netanyahu basically wanted to show foreign power gravitas. Let's go to Uncle Sam and our biggest supporter, and here's the relations that I have, so it looks good at home back as a photo op. And the president was like, we're not going to get involved in tilting the scales that far for Netanyahu, which seems perfectly reasonable to me for the White House to say that. But then all the House Republicans spun it as, he hates Israel, and you know, he's
well, they see it as a chance to break off a very, very influential group within politics. The Jewish people, you know, the Jewish people in America have voted Democratic since their inception. Yeah. And so the Republicans see it as, and really they shouldn't. There's no reason why they should whatsoever. They most align with Republican hawkism. They are neoconservative in thought. And yet they've always voted with the Democrats. And
socially
John Boehner
as well, yeah.
John Boehner's getting way out ahead of it, and he sees it as a chance to break off and get the Jewish vote, which is ultimately a fool's gold or a fool's errand, because they're such a small voting bloc. They have influential power, but only because they're allied with groups that can mobilize.
They're also a large.
They get bigger influence because they're with the unions. Allied with them. When you put them in the Republican Party, if you do.
Their ad breaks on election day.
Yeah, and then they're a serious, serious Achilles heel, because there's no ever backing away from that hawk position.
Sure. Well, they also bring a lot of funding. I mean, and as the Republicans have to do whatever they can do to try and get more and more funding and voting blocks aligned with them as the Hispanic vote continues to grow, just in pure numbers. They're a voting block, and I think
that the Republicans trying to hit the Hispanic vote really hard is a bad decision.
Well, it's a matter of survival for them because if the Hispanics come out in numbers as they're trending to vote for Democrats, they just totally take over the Republican vote.
My point is that all assumes that every other voting block stays constant.
Sure.
And I think that putting all of your eggs in the basket of we need to make sure that we get a significant portion of the Hispanic vote is dumb if you're doing it at the expense of getting significant portions of other blocks. I think we're at a time within American politics where lines are blurred as to what you support and which party you're in. So, like the reason that people like Rand and Justin Amash and Thomas Massie can go out and support things that even 5 years ago were anti-Republican, but then they can get away with being Republicans and doing it and not, you know, be like Justin Amash handily won his against his establishment, you know, challenger.
It was a total putz.
Oh, God. But, like, These people can do this because, you know, what people consider to be conservative or Republican or liberal or Democrat, those lines are becoming blurred. And I think the solution is to, and I, that's another reason why I like Rand, is because it seems like he's understands this, is to go out and get those people who, you know, to bridge gaps with these people that have never really been Republican to begin with. Like, you know, Rand isn't going to get a majority of the black vote in 2016 by any stretch of the imagination.
But he'll get 5% more than Romney.
Yeah, he'll get a larger percentage than probably any Republican's gotten in a long, long time.
Oh, yeah.
And that means you don't have to take an entire voting block to beat Democrats. You only got to get some of them.
The reason
Republicans have always been the older white male and the married woman. That's been their voting block forever.
Yep. David Bowes has done a lot of research into the power of the libertarian voting bloc and wrote a couple papers. Libertarians in the Age of Obama, I think, is one of them, and has consistently made the point that libertarians are the most powerful group of independents, and independents are what make or break elections. And so it is important to court the libertarian vote because they actually have a lot of influence and power amongst independents. Now, as a political party, not as much. But if you look at, as we discussed about people who tend to lean libertarian, both left and right, and pure libertarians, they are a powerful voting bloc. And most people would identify themselves as libertarians if they gave a crap about politics. And so that is why Rand Paul has the most appeal out of the major party candidates, because he can appeal to that large base. Chris Christie feels like an independent. He will never make it through any kind of primary. But if he did, he'd have a great shot at the presidency because he appeals to independents.
No, he wouldn't. He would not. He would not even if he got through the primary, then Democrats would walk in.
If you look at things through the lens of people who are hardcore politicos,
he's an asshole.
That's
what New Jersey likes about him.
Right.
That's not what America likes about him. If he were to go in and those people that don't pay attention to politics that you're talking about got to see him be an asshole, they'd be like, I'm going to vote for this guy. You're talking about people who vote for someone for president based upon whether or not they think they can have a beer with him.
Right.
Like this, those people would not vote for Christie. He'd get slaughtered.
He also has a huge problem with, you know, $30,000 a night hotel rooms paid by the King of Jordan, all that kind of stuff. But Rand Paul is...
Plus he's a Cowboys fan.
Oh, that right there seals the deal. F that guy.
He might be an ISIS.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I don't hate the Cowboys. That joke's just too easy to make.
Rand, as early as 2010, I was just looking at him going, okay, this guy can thread the needle between the Tea Party Republicans and the libertarians, and I can tell you, I sit down, I have more in common with modern-day Democrats than I do with Tea Party Republicans anymore. But he has threaded that needle beautifully and masterfully. And
at the same time, he's getting, you know, he can say that
you know, that he's like a Tea Party Republican. Tea Party people totally support him. And then he can go and say, let's audit the Pentagon. He goes and visits Ferguson. He supports mandatory minimums.
Morehouse College.
Reforming.
Yeah.
He's out liberaling liberals. And he's doing it in the ways that libertarians want, where like the parts that we support the left on, you know, he's out there saying that we should support them on this. And it's like, he straight up says, you know, let's leave the gay marriage issue alone because this is not going to ever turn out well for Republicans ever. So just shut up about it. I mean, he is politically the most powerful person who's even remotely libertarian. And you know, you can get into this whole, well, he's not his father thing, and that's another one for libertarians right. who aren't important.
Well, he is proving that something that I've long held believes that libertarians need to be more of a coalition group like the Democrats are than top-down management like Republicans.
He endorsed Romney, though.
Yeah.
He endorsed Romney, man. He endorsed Romney. We can't support him.
Is it the Mormon thing?
Yeah, shut up.
The magic underwear.
It's just
I think that, though, for the longest time, I felt like you guys, or I felt, and this has just occurred to me kind of recently, been mulling it over, that the Republican Party, it's inevitable they're going to end up libertarian. Or libertarian-leaning and liberty-leaning. It's inevitable, or the Dixiecrats.
At least for when our generation tends to be the majority of the party, for sure.
I am, I don't know if I'm there yet, but I've been mulling over, so there's a political philosophy because, like, you know, obviously it's gross. In the Republican Party, there is no consistent political philosophy. Same with Democrats. But there is an emerging political philosophy that's very new. It's been around for probably 6-8 years. It was in England first, called communitarianism. And communitarianism is basically collectivism, but implemented throughout local-based communities, still state-administered. And it's...
Isn't that what James Neese is?
No, he's a mutualist, and they don't. Okay. That's the theory of value of labor, like the shirt's worth.
Mutualists don't believe in property.
Yeah. So, but this is a really interesting idea, and I think it's the bet that the GOP is going to make, and I think that's why you're seeing them target the Jewish vote, and it just came on my radar in the Hispanic vote, because if you look at those two voting blocks, the GOP's historically avoided identity politics, targeting specific groups. Now they're starting to. And I think the reason why is the GOP has a choice. They can morph towards a collective culturally group, or they can morph towards a liberty-oriented and individualism and economic-focused group. You can fundraise way the hell better off of community-based. Way better.
Well, that's... I was having lunch with a friend who is involved in the Libertarian Party, and you know, he's like, we have to stop thinking about political organizations in terms of communities, and or even organizing in communities. Like, that's just a simple way to put people in a geographical location. But truthfully, the world now organizes itself in tribes. Yep. So the people listening to us are closer to probably libertarians than they are their next-door neighbor. You know, if you're a tech person, tech people locally. If you're a podcaster, we've got a podcast meetup now, you know.
Yeah, there is a reduced incentive to, you know, become like your neighbor.
Right.
So that, you know, people like to hang out with people they agree with and that they are more, they're like. So, like, you know, in the back when, you know, you had to write mail to people to talk to them, you know, your community was like the people in your local community. That was who you hung out with. Those were the people that you identified with. Now, with our age of communication, that incentive is greatly reduced.
And you'll reject your neighbor if they don't fit into one of your tribes. Let's say you're the Republican, and you know your neighbor is a flaming Obama person. Well, F that guy.
Well, and how many people even hang out with their neighbors that much anymore? It's like, how, can you tell me the names of the people that live
alcoholics. People love to get together and get drunk. That's their community.
Yeah, and that's just...
Makes you feel a part of something bigger.
I mean, you know, like, my friends are people from out in D.C., but
right.
They're also people that I've just known...
But that misses something very important. How often do millennials show up to vote?
That's a fair point.
I think it'll grow and grow
so
as you grow up.
This is my theory.
That's important now, but...
It is going to be important going forward.
But I think we see... that's true, but I think that... I think the biggest problem with Republicans, politically speaking, is they are very, very bad about adjusting to changing times when it comes to how they run their politics. Democrats outmaneuver them, you know, a million times over when it comes to how to run campaigns and get people elected. It's like a majority, like they've done polls, a majority of Americans agree with the fundamental principles of like conservatives, if you want to go, if you
right.
like, but like individualism, small, but, so, but
they culturally identify with them. That's the killer.
Culture identify with who?
Republicans, conservatives. That's the killer. And that's why I think this is the grand, I think Rince Priebus, I don't know if this is right, but it's been bugging me and it's been in my head. I think they're making a community-based play, and I think they're going to go after the Jewish vote, and I think they're going to go after the Catholic vote and the Hispanic vote. And I think if you see a Catholic Rick Santorum, a Hispanic, you win. You fundraise, you win. Marco Rubio is not the right vessel. Marco Rubio is, one, not a great politician, and two, he's too murky. He doesn't come down. You give me Rick Santorum and Marco Rubio's body, you just dominate Florida.
Yeah, you've got to have a person who grabs these communities by the lapels and says, I'm one of you, give me money. I mean, you'll back me up on this, Creighton. Like, if you're fundraising in politics anymore, it is not about it is about single issue. The way to really raise money in politics is, I'm a Second Amendment person, send me money so we can enact legislation. So take the group, take the tribe, essentially, and say, I'm going to be the sword for you. So we're going to go out and we're going to enact Second Amendment legislation. We're going to enact gay marriage. We're going to, you know, it is going to become issue. And so to be powerful in politics, I'm doing it again. To be powerful in politics anymore, you've got to have a list, a powerful database of people that believe in your issue.
So give me the conservatives who you know are going to turn out, regardless, the lifelong Republicans. All of a sudden, you give me a Catholic and who votes Democratic and a Hispanic voting base. You turn the tides in Florida. You stop Texas from becoming blue, which it's on the verge of becoming. You win probably Pennsylvania, probably, because you get the Catholic vote. And if you can get the Hispanics, you got it. Like, that's the one thing. Rick Santorum gives you a shot at Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. The election's over. It's done.
That's why Jeb should almost not run and just get out of the way for George P. Bush.
His
son.
And if you, and that's why I think, like, damn, I thought it was inevitable that the GOP was going to become liberty based. I think he may be pulling off, like, the Rince Priebus might be pulling off the biggest coup ever if they can get the Jewish vote, which maybe gets you New Hampshire, which makes it easier to win because the Republicans got to have those few votes that can get them to 271. Mm-hmm. And then you get the community base. And that's the thing. Culturally, Hispanics are community based. They don't give a crap about anything other than their tribe.
Yeah, but I think you're missing whether or not a Rick Santorum would just piss off the other side.
Oh, he would. But give me a Hispanic, well-spoken, like, smart.
But the thing is like, if Republicans have lost on anything so undeniably bad, it is, you know, the social conservative issues. Like, that is what's killing the party.
Sometimes, but you got to measure it
all of the time.
Why do Hispanics vote to the Democrat Party? They don't care because it's a collective cultural mindset of taking care of those that are most like you, and the Republicans are more individual based.
But what I'm saying is like, by and large in our society, you know, the social conservative idea, like, of, you know, the anti-homosexual kind of mindset, the don't do drugs kind of mindset, that is the single biggest thing that is killing Republicans. You know, if you want to ask anybody who doesn't like Republicans what their primary reason they don't like Republicans is, they're probably going to say, well, they support women's rights and they support gay marriage and things like that.
But this is a paradigm shift from that view, because now all these moderates, the so-called swing voters, which make up 4% of the electorate, are irrelevant because now you just got 10% of the Hispanic vote. So you're up 6. And it's over.
I don't know. Plus, you
know, if you can get them to believe that you're communitarian.
But there's also the problem of
now you're talking about, too, good media coverage.
No, I'm saying, like, if you're just saying that Hispanics will vote for a Hispanic Rick Santorum, because he's Hispanic. But, you know, if...
because he's Catholic. Because he's community-based.
Yeah, he's Catholic. But my thing, what I'm saying is like, I don't know. I don't think that... I think you're putting too much stake in the Hispanic basket again. It's like...
Oh, and I'm thinking long term. I'm not thinking this election.
Carne asada?
No. I'm thinking long term because for the longest time, I thought it was inevitable. The Liberty Movement was only...
Stick, like S-T-A-K.
Oh, okay. I thought you meant carne asada in Joe Ruiz's basket.
I mixed two different idioms there, I think.
It's just something to be aware of because if the Liberty Movement doesn't turn out, because that's the bet right now, is that it's going to be the Justin Amash voter. But we don't vote. We don't give money. We don't fundraise. We don't activists.
Well, some
they're armchair Facebook activists.
But those are the ones that we know because. But the thing is like they do go out and organize. That's why organizations like YAL and SFL and organizations like that exist, Right to Work and things like that, which is more Republican but very liberty leaning. You know, they exist and they're very active and organizing. You know. That's because there is a large section of the liberty movement that does believe in organizing. Now we tend, because we're online a lot, we tend to experience the ones who say, you know, politics is aggression. But like that is a minority of.
No, it's the apathy of our generation, though. That is the concern. Whereas well, when it's every, a community, every young, there's every that public shaming.
Yeah, but every
issue
young,
that turns
youth organization
you
is apathetic. Like all you have to do to wait, all you have to do to make sure that our generation won't be apathetic is give them a few years. Because every young generation is apathetic.
That's always
the problem.
Vietnam,
with,
Korea.
Well, Vietnam when they were getting drafted, like if you look like every you know 18 to 24 year old block, you know by and large throughout you know post World War II history has skewed towards not voting because they don't care, and it's always when they get older that they start caring.
Well, for sure, and
they start making money.
But the issue, though, and I could be totally wrong. I just would be very cautious of it. And I just have been that guy that's mocked him relentlessly for even considering the Jeb Bush, for considering the Rick Santorum. You know what I mean? Like Sarah Palin it type. But the more and more I think about it, and the more and more I hear like certain rhetoric and look at the future, I think it's going to come down to a bet between conservative Christians and community type identity politics in the liberty movement. And if your bet is that you're going to get people who are liberty oriented, who already vote at like 30% and who have a distrust in government of over 70%, you think that they're going to file a pride of citizenship to turn up and vote when they don't get the day off, even if they did, that is a huge gamble.
But you also have the gamble, because I was thinking about this week, the gamble of keeping your eggs in the Sarah Palin basket and courting the Christian conservative voters. And he's right. I've said it a million times on this podcast. The decision to focus on gay marriage as the central battle has single-handedly destroyed the Republican Party and the evangelical Christian movement. And it doesn't connect with people. And that is the central issue for most of these folks. And the Sheldon whatevers from Nevada, the
Sheldon Adelson.
Adelsons of the world, you know, there aren't a lot of Chris Roofers and Koch brothers who are funding these libertarian organizations that are producing material like IHS produces with Learn Liberty or libertarianism.org or libertarianism.com. There aren't enough of those guys. The money base for the Republican Party is not the Tea Party guy, but the person who identifies with the Tea Party. You know, not the person who's going to the Tea Party meeting, but the guy who listens to Rush Limbaugh and says, yeah, that's right. That's what I think. You know, it is why WIBC here in Indianapolis went from a news station to a Rush Limbaugh knockoff station with all these conservative, quote-unquote, thinkers who don't have an original thought in their head. It's because their ratings are starting to move up and up and up because that preaching to the choir works. That crowd, the people who listen to talk radio, are the money base, the voter base of the Republican Party.
Yeah, totally the base.
And if you want to survive as a political party, you can't cater to that base because the growing majority of people are libertarians, or they're liberal leaning, or they're Democrats, and they reject everything that is talked about on talk radio.
But here's the, and this is where it goes back to that communitarianism. That's the messaging that's different.
Mm-hmm.
It's community, tribe based, 2.0, govern local.
Well,
it's
that was,
care about.
But can the talk radio voter accept being part of a coalition? Can they accept?
Sure.
Can they accept that they are no longer the power? That they are just a piece of the power?
Without a doubt. You put Mike Huckabee and you have him not talk about gay marriage, and you start talking about, we got to come together as a community and care about each other and love each other. That's a winning message, and it's consistent with the communitarian principle,
sure.
And it builds a coalition that can't be beat.
But that's not mutually exclusive of the liberty message. Like, people who, like, if you're talking about, like, a liberty message and not in the sense of, like, free markets only, but, like, talking about an actual liberty message, you're going to talk about people bringing other people together. It's like, they're not going to go out and say Gary, they're not going to go, like, people like, let's just use Rand because he's the best example. Like, what he's doing is he's going out to all of these communities that have not been part of the Republican
base. And I totally agree with you.
And saying that this you should come into their open arms, and like, we support this and all this kind of stuff,
and I totally agree with you, and I'm on your team, but I'm saying it's dangerous because we don't vote or donate or go out.
No, but those other people that he's courting do vote. Like,
no.
That's what I'm saying is, like, Rand Paul, if Rand Paul wins the primaries, all of those Christian conservatives will vote for him. They're not gonna vote for Hillary Clinton,
but they won't vote.
Oh, yes, they will.
No way.
Oh, yes. Little grandma who's down the street and hasn't missed an election in 30 years is not going to miss one because Rand Paul doesn't go out and say we should hate gay people.
I'm telling you, they won't, because Karl Rove won George W. Bush that election because he had identified that the most undervalued voting bloc in all of American politics was people who went to church once a week. All of a sudden, compassionate conservatism, Christian conservatism becomes the biggest thing. Otherwise, it should never have even been possible for George W. Bush to be in that election. Bill Clinton was coming off the highest ratings. Al Gore was not a light you on fire candidate, but it should have been like George H.W. Bush. Like, inevitable, we'll give this guy a shot because the last one was good. And because Karl Rove identified it, they were able to pull off the biggest coup of a no-name upstart governor who ended up being a two-term president and terrible. And because he identified once a week voters, once a week church attendees. They only showed up at 20%. George W. Bush got him at 45%. All of a sudden, you get Mike Huckabee, you get Fox News, you get all of it because Karl Rove identified.
Yeah, but
group.
I don't think that's Karl Rove only. I think that had been growing since, like, Pat, what's his face, in the 80s.
No, it dropped off the planet after 94. That's why he brought him back. And they played up Bush's Christian conservatism. We need values back in the White House after he's discredited the Oval Office culturally. I'm on your team. I want it to be the Liberty Movement, but I'm saying watch out, because if they change their messaging and they go to the community-based tribes, we need to help people. So if they get that
They've always been community-based. Like, it's always been the family and church unit. It's been individual, but it's always been like, we need to support the family.
But it's
like,
been economic individualism.
Yeah, it's been economic individualism.
Why do you think?
But they always
George
talk
w.
about
Bush's
how you
biggest
know,
initiative was the faith based initiatives, where he used federal funds distributed through
listen,
churches.
What,
and communities.
What you're saying is essentially that the Republican Party to survive needs to be like Bush again.
I'm saying they have two options, and be really careful if they update. I want them to be
no
liberty,
no. I'm, I know what you're saying.
I thought they only had one, and it just occurred to me this week after mulling it over. And reading about, like, I've known about communitarianism, but it hasn't been rising a whole lot, and now it's starting to get some, like, on academia.edu, it's starting to show up again and again. It's like a consistent political philosophy that, there's been no new political philosophy in years.
Mm-hmm.
This is new. This is interesting. And if they use it right, they can keep their base the same, who already donates, and they can pick off ones who already identify with them culturally, and that makes them dangerous.
No, the reason that I think liberty is going to be the one that takes over is because I think it's a generational thing. I think that that money base we're talking about is all really old, and the ones who are young are donating to the Democrats, and they don't support that social kind of thing that you're talking about. And I think that over time, the Republican Party to survive has to become more liberty oriented, because if they don't, then they're going to lose the younger generations. So if community thing in the long run, I think that you're putting too much stake in our generation being the same as the previous one.
But the beautiful thing about the community based argument is it is community based. It's federal. It's different levels, and it isn't, it's not tied down to a specific vessel. Your community can be your community of, we live in a very accepting, it can be the Kathy Reisenwitz, the feminism type community, right, tied in next to the Catholic type. That's the beauty of this vessel and why it's dangerous, because it takes individualism but puts it into little tribes and keeps it all within house.
Right.
And so I'd watch out for that big time and try to crush it.
Well, that's, all right. Well, we.
Yeah, I got to go.
Final thought, because we got to wrap up here. Greg has.
I've dominated the mic. I'm good.
He's got poon hounding to do.
No. Birthday party.
Me too. I got a birthday party tonight. There you go. Look at that. All right. So final thoughts to wrap up. Creighton, step on your soapbox. What have we missed that you didn't get to say? Where we stepped over you, or an issue we didn't even get to this week?
I don't know. Same thing I always say is libertarians need to stop being so stupid.
That's what I love about the show.
You're like
accepting, loving.
How to win friends and influence people.
No, I'm totally preaching to a libertarian choir. So I'm going.
Everybody who listens to this show is smart. Is talented,
good looking,
is beautiful, is a thorough and generous lover. They are fantastic. It's the people that listen to those other podcasts that we don't trust.
No. I say libertarians need to stop being stupid because you guys are stupid. So stop being stupid. I mean, and I mean that in how we were talking about earlier. It's like, you know, get off of the internet, go out and do something. Stop saying that, you know, we need to go harass meter maids and that's our way to advance liberty.
Have anybody in mind when you said that, Creighton?
Perhaps. stop thinking that being an asshole is the way to win. You know, and stop trying to stop being like a liberal douchebag and pretending that you're a libertarian, because, you know, As long as you don't think that the state should do anything about it, fine. But, you know, your message of advancing the liberty movement is by saying that we should stop hating gay people is not going to win with libertarians, because we don't hate gay people, and you're wrong. So, I mean, that's just generally what we were talking about earlier.
All right, Greg?
One thing, just a little tidbit, watch, the Supreme Court Obamacare subsidy challenge. I just read a really interesting wrinkle on that this week, is that if they rule that it is not, you are not eligible for a federal subsidy if it's not a state, operated exchange and it's through the federal exchange, then it all comes apart.
Yeah.
Because, and the reason why, and it's not because of what I thought. It's because then the employer mandate doesn't work, because then the employers would be exempt from having to pay the penalty in order to fund it when they put their employees onto the exchange.
Plus you've just raised taxes on people and given them no subsidy, like you said you would.
Yeah, and like, so that you can still operate it, they're just going to have to pay for it themselves out of pocket, and you'll have a bunch of people into criminals. But this actually ends it completely, because then the employers would have no ability to even follow the law. And so it cannot be a law.
Yeah. No, it's very...
Really interesting wrinkle. I have the article. We can put it up if anybody cares.
Yeah, please. My final thought is, once again, thank you to Phyllis Kozinski.
Yep. Yes,
we'll
thank
do
you,
that every time forever. Here from the Phyllis Kozinski Studios. So if you've made it to the end of the show, you are a true fan of We're Libertarians. That means that we need you to invest in us a little bit. Not talking monetarily, although if you want to donate money to help offset all the hosting costs and everything, then go to WeAreLibertarians.com, and at the bottom of the page is the PayPal tip jar, and you can send us money, or just buy us pizza and beer. It costs Greg at least $478 every episode in just alcohol to do this podcast.
It's a lot of MGD.
Mm-hmm.
High life.
And so we're not really asking for money. We just want you to go to the website, make it a bookmark, subscribe to the podcast, retweet us, like our Facebook page, share our Facebook post, comment, get engaged, tell friends about it. Easy stuff. We're not asking for anything, well, you know, money, but anything other than just engage with us, share us, help us grow. You know, we're now well, I'm now engaged a little bit, which means that I'm going to start recruiting some more writers. We're going to be putting out more content. We're going to help build you, help give you materials for you to convince your friends that that you believe the right thing, that they are wrong and you are right. So we're going to be doing more and more, and we want some investment because it is encouraging. Trust me. This past year personally was very rough, but I didn't close the website and stop doing the podcast because there were so many people who were commenting, saying, I love this show, reviewing it on iTunes, giving us 5 stars, asking when the next podcast was, sharing our content, liking it. We don't get paid to do this. We paid to do this. It cost us money. And the only pay that we get is people engaging in the content. It is a thrill for us when somebody likes something on Facebook, when somebody tweets something, when somebody retweets, heck, even likes our Google Plus page, goes to our YouTube, subscribes there, likes our Instagram, all that stuff. We can't believe we do have an Instagram.
What pictures are you sharing?
Oh, wouldn't you like
I
to
bet
know?
I bet it's nothing but your cats.
It is nothing but Whitney over and over and over.
You better hope not.
We're hitting the creepertarian crowd. So, or as we are now calling her, the prom queen of Liberty. So
no, we're not calling that. No one. You're the only one who's called it.
Hi, Whitney.
It is basically, it is like when What's-His-Face, the red-haired coach that yells at everybody on Monday Night Football, when he started calling Peyton Manning the sheriff.
Oh, John Gruden.
John Gruden was single-handedly trying to make that a thing.
And I still call Curtis Painter deputy sheriff.
So I'm going to call...
What?
Yeah. Oh, it was awesome.
Does Curtis Painter even play football anymore?
I think he's the backup for the Giants.
Yeah.
For Eli.
Yeah. So,
deputy sheriff,
you're the prom king of Liberty. The only way that we get paid to do this, that keeps us going, that makes us want to do more, is by you investing in us a little bit, by basically just interacting, sharing, telling us what you like and what you don't like, more than what you like, because generally we just go, I don't care about your opinion. But we do kind of listen. So that is my spiel for the you know, trust me. It has kept me somewhat engaged the last year, just knowing that people like the podcast and enjoy it and get something out of it, that there is benefit to what we're doing.
At the end of the day, you became a meme.
At the very least, I became. I got a new nickname, Dear Leader. And you've got one, the Prom King of Liberty.
No. One person does not a meme make.
Says you.
Says the internet.
I mean,
we should have a We Are Libertarians prom.
We should. I love it. It'll be nothing but no eye contact and girls and guys separated from across the room, and those are the couples.
But they'll be Facebook chatting together.
Right, yeah. I'll be, so, Creighton, you can attest to this. I mean, I am starting to hear more and more, mostly thanks to LRN.FM. Check it out, LRN.FM. Our friends at Free Talk Live and their radio network, you know, putting out the podcast, you know. Oh, yeah, I've heard of We're Libertarians. After 3 years of hard work, that is finally, we're starting to hear that. So we're all committed. We're all going to keep doing this. We're not going to be one of those blogs that shut down and disappears. Because trust me, if we kept podcasting through this past year, there's no way we're not going to be doing it for a long time. So the only thing that you can choose to do is help us grow, because we're not going away. So thank you all for listening to
what
this.
What can I attest to?
That people like message you and like, yeah, I've heard of Creighton Harrington. He's on that podcast.
He dates Whitney Davis.
Yeah. He's the prom king of Liberty. They're getting married any day now.
No.
I follow her on Instagram.
Oh, yeah. I've heard her talked about in brutalist groups. What's her Snapchat? Creeps. Listen.
I'm going to punch you, Spangle.
Listen, libertarians, here's a PSA for you, prom king. PK.
I was actually up for prom king, but I didn't win.
PK, leave Creighton's girlfriend alone. You're all gross and creepy, and I'm talking to you, Aaron Ewart.
Well, it's actually Bruce Ewart. He's undergoing a transition.
All right, thank you for listening to this episode of We're Libertarians. Remember, libertarians, don't be creepy. That's our message for this week.
Yes.
Don't be creepy. And that goes for me. Especially. All right. Facebook you later. Thanks for listening. And as promised, and as always, and what, Greg? How's it go?
Do you really not know it?
And as always, we promise to do
better next time.
Have a nice day.
Wow, that was an Aspie version.
Music for We Are Libertarians is provided by Hoosier musician Brian Keith Wallen. Please check out his website, briankeithwallen.com. The song is Bad Spell.